Well, things tend to happen or start as little trickles, and then they become waves and finally tsunamis. And perhaps that's what we're seeing occurring in South Africa's destructive BEE policies. The IRR, Institute for Race Relations, has been making a lot of headway in this regard just by sharing information. But what Makoni Maja will tell us this morning is the information is now being shared in a very interesting place. I was taken by your statement, Makoni, and lovely to talk to you again, that you are now reaching out to the MK Party and the EFF. Now, in many ways, we hear, or they've been painted as people that one doesn't, sensible, rational minds do not engage with. I've always found that to be rather strange, given that we as human beings are a heck of a lot more similar than our differences. But just unpack for us what it is you are doing with the MK Party and with the EFF, given that the IRR is such a formidable think tank.
Indeed. Thank you for having me, Alec. I think you're right in your characterization of how people typically perceive these parties. I think over and above that, we also have to consider that a lot of South Africans have placed these parties in parliament, in government. So there's certainly a lot of people who, for an institute like RR, which is classically libertarian, can see that they are odd. We are odd liaisons with parties like the EFF and the MK. But we don't think that should stop us from reaching out, specifically if you consider that the political climate has changed. We have firmly entered into coalition territory. And so more opportunities have opened for us to collaborate where we can, in areas that we can, with even our most odd of ideological partners. And so that's certainly the EFF and the MK. We found specifically that with their opposition to the VAT hike created a very solid bridge for us to reach out to them. This is an issue that the IR and the EFF and the MK have found very solid common ground on, specifically the desire to protect South African taxpayers and even more the poor. Both the EFF and the MK have used very strong words to condemn the VAT hike. They've described it as an attack and a war on working classes and middle class South African sentiments that we generally agree with. And so it was the VAT hike that presented that opportunity for us to reach out to them on other ways in which revenue can be raised to supplement the fiscal deficit that the VAT hike is meant to achieve. And when you speak about how people do not necessarily view them as rational, I think that's a mistake. You'll find that there's already so much common areas of agreement between parties like the EFF and the MK, as well as India, with the IRR, and that's on things like BEE. In the MK manifesto, they've described BEE as a failure. They say that it keeps communities persistently marginalized. Again, that's an area where we agree with them. The EFF said in 2017 that BEE facilitates patrimonialism, the stuffing of governments with specifically impersonal democratic governments with friends and family of the bureaucratic state. Again, these are things the IR has long been warning about, that such is the nature of BEE and that it would be the inevitable result of implementing policies such as BEE. So our approach was to invite them to discuss alternatives to raising the VAT hike by cutting through things like the BEE premiums. I know you've had my colleague Gabriel Krause here to discuss those premiums extensively. But we believe that BEE premiums are effectively an additional tax specifically on marginalized communities. And if we already have this great desire between the EFF, the MK, and the IRR to shield those underprivileged communities from being further blown away by taxes, we think that BEE premiums are certainly one that they should consider. And we believe they'd be open to it. There's already, again, those common sentiments we share around the failures of BEE. BEE premiums punish underprivileged communities. They prop up. They say to communities, it's okay for you to stall and stave off your own development, your own job opportunities, your own efficient service delivery in order to prop up BEE caterers. That's a big mistake. And we think that the EFF and the MK would likely be open to considering that.
What about the alternative that the IRR has been promoting? We had also, apart from speaking with Gabriel about the actual cost of the current elite enrichment program, which the ANC calls BEE, that there is an alternative that Anthea Jeffrey has proposed, which it seemed to make a lot of sense, and certainly to me, and it appears to have worked elsewhere in the world. Have you been able to float that idea, and maybe you can just unpack it for us briefly, with the MK party and the EFF, given that ideologically on this area you are aligned?
So you're speaking about EED. That's the policy we call Economic Empowerment for the Disadvantaged. We believe that EED would be a more apposite and incisive way of addressing poverty and economic marginalization in the country. EED, rather than BEE, would identify beneficiaries by means testing them. So you take into one of the things we define along the meritocracy lines in the EED framework is by using economic status, socioeconomic status, as a means of depicting people who would benefit from the policy. And that's very different from BEE, because BEE uses race. And race doesn't quite address poverty, because it almost uses the word black as a synonym for poverty, which is a mistake, because already so much development has happened in the black community in South Africa, in the black society amongst black people. So what ends up happening is that people who would have already acquired those jobs, already been able to do business with the state, are the ones who are launched by these BEE opportunities, rather than looking and seeking out people who really are poor. And that's one idea that we will be discussing with the MK and the EFF. So we've used our letter as a sort of invitation to discuss BEE premiums and EED with them. We do not see how that they would oppose such a policy. In fact, we are open to having them contribute ideas of enriching EED, specifically in identifying people from those underprivileged neighborhoods and communities in South Africa, and how EED can be used to target them specifically and lift them out of poverty, get them on the employment ladder, get them on the economic ladder, and close that gap of economic exclusion.
The mere fact that you are reaching across what appeared to be an ideological chasm really says a lot about your perception of those parties. Now, the typical perception, if you look at social media and certainly even the way that they are painted, and they don't help this perception through some of the comments that are made, but it is that the MK party and the EFF are really just fronts, and that the guys who are there are not really interested in those they represent. In fact, they're just interested in grabbing part of the largesse for themselves. Clearly, the fact that you've just reached out to them suggests that you do not go along with that common perception.
Listen, I think that that perception shouldn't stop us from reaching out effectively. We should also take into consideration the statements that they've made and attached to things like their manifestos, over and above their performance. I think sometimes a lot of it can be just the nature of politics, the performative nature of politics. But I also think that we should hold them to the statements that they bound themselves to specifically, in more binding ways. You know, a manifesto certainly gives more strength to one's position, and we should hold them to that, right? These are parties that are dedicating themselves to defending working class people in South Africa, impoverished people in South Africa. Let's have a holistic view at all the elements that South African policy has enabled the inequalities and deepened poverty for those communities, and that's something like EEE. So I think we should not limit ourselves to how they often presented themselves in the political arena. Sometimes I think a lot of that can be performance once the cameras come on. But I think something like a manifesto is what we're leading with when we are approaching them, that they've bound themselves to this commitment to poor communities in South Africa. And we are confident that they'd be willing to have that, again, look at all the other areas in which those communities are kept in poverty. And we think BEE is certainly one of them.
Connie, I'm going to float something at you, because a journey of 1,000 miles is always started by a few steps in a direction. At the time of the analysis after the May 2024 election, it appeared, if you look at it arithmetically, that there was a possibility, there is the potential, if former enemies were to get together, to eject the ANC from power, to then shine a light on embedded corruption, which remains within the system, and by doing so, perhaps do a lot more good than having unfortunate bedfellows who, as things stand at the moment, would not even want to talk to each other. And I thought about that a lot and proposed that to a few people, but it really was very firmly rejected. No, the DA would never work with the MK and EFF. Is this journey of 1,000 miles not maybe pointing us in that direction? Because the stuff that's going on, and I'll point you to what is happening with the Fort Hare duo. Here are two lawyers who were brought into Fort Hare University by the university vice chancellor to address corruption there. They then get locked up for their report, which fingers the sitting Eastern Cape premier, who bought a doctorate and a master's degree and is one of many, many politicians, ANC politicians, who did that. Now, if this can happen on the one hand, then how can we not think that something a heck of a lot more radical is required to cut out the cancer which is built in the system over many, many years? But maybe I'm being a bit too chaotic here in trying to change the order.
Yeah, something a lot more radical than those parties collaborating on issues that they agree with, I think, is where I'm more inclined to lead. Just the GNU hasn't inspired much confidence that, you know, odd political partners can really operate in good faith and in goodwill to co-govern and share in governance. It seems that generally the leading parties in a coalition want to govern with an iron fist and feel entitled to their minority partners' cooperation, which is a huge mistake. But I do think that where these parties agree, there should be more collaboration. I don't think they should resign themselves off entirely to not working together. That is obviously a mistake, given that in the next election, it is likely that, you know, the ANC definitely falls even more below that 40% that they are now just coasting by. So what you are likely to see is that the majority share of a big party is even less. The biggest party in a coalition's majority vote share will be even less, which presents opportunity for them to work together. But I do think that it should be along the lines where they agree, rather than just entirely entering into a coalition and hoping that somehow all the issues that they have ideological, policy wise, will be resolved. I think there will be more stability if the collaboration is along specific areas of agreement.
Although the IRR looks at a very broad area in society, you also do follow politics very closely. And I'm hearing more and more that the Democratic Alliance is looking to restructure itself. It knows what it needs to do to become the biggest party in South Africa. And it will need something different. And in particular, it would need black leadership. I mean, that, just to be pragmatic, is one of the, it might not be something that non-racial eyes would appreciate, but in the society that we live, it is something that for optics alone is going to be hugely beneficial. Would that, though, be something that would transform the Democratic Alliance into a potential 51% party, as Moletsi Mbeki at our conference was banging on about? He said, what are you going to do, Helen, to actually be 51%? Because you cannot fix the country unless you're in that position, in his opinion anyway. And he was referring to Helen Zille.
History tells us otherwise. I think the DA has experimented with sort of launching a black candidate into a position of power, and the voters rejected that individual. I'm more inclined to think that it's less about race and more about competent leadership. And in a country as diverse as South Africa, racially diverse, culturally diverse, I think it's less about a white or a black leader and more about a leader who can speak to the South African people. So where that leader is a white person, that person understands black culture. I mean, 80% of the population is black after all, but understands black culture, understands, you know, attitudes, behavior, sensitivities of black culture, and can speak to that in a nuanced way. Similarly, a black leader would need to also be able to speak to black people, who make up the majority of voters in South Africa, in a way that addresses those voters' concerns and attitudes and behaviors and cultural backgrounds. So, staunchly non-racial as I am, I'm inclined to think that it's less about race and more that competence is more than just your degree, but that you're actually able to communicate to the people over whom you govern, and that you have a deep understanding of these people, that you've embedded yourself into their cultural ways, into their daily lives, and can really speak to that in a nuanced but genuine way.
But it's so interesting the way the world is changing now, given the way that just in the last 24 hours, the US has attempted and perhaps even managed to turn the whole world on its head. By 24 hours ago, it looked like China was going to be everybody's best friend. Now it looks like China might be everybody's worst enemy. So who knows what's going to happen in the South African scenario. You remain very optimistic, though, Makhoni, and I think that there are many people who do follow BizNews because we do try and find solutions rather than just moan, 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 which is so easy to do in our beleaguered society. What gives you hope? What gives you the brighter or the glass half full approach towards our country?
You know, a lot of the sentiment has changed. When you think how taboo it was 20 years ago for the Institute, the lone voice against policies such as BEE, where we flagged up the potential for enormous corruption, for declining service delivery because you're focusing on things other than merit-based appointments. When you consider the shift in sentiment and that people are now more willing to confront the failures of BEE and are searching for alternatives, which is why it's so important that as the IRR, we present this vision of what South Africa can be with policy like EED, with collaboration with odd political liaisons where we do agree. I think that's what gives us hope, is just observing as we have over time that South Africans are shifting more and more towards, you know, policy that the IR has long researched would get us to those growth trajectories, growth levels, job creation levels that we foresee would occur with the policy that we have researched.
Yeah, it's South Africa has always been a country with massive, massive potential, and I don't think anybody can deny that. But as Bobby Godsell put it so well, some years ago when he was describing this, he said, we are blessed by our people, but cursed by our governors, but blessed by organizations like the IRR who show us the path. It just seems to take society a while to catch up. Makhoni Maja is campaign manager at the Institute for Race Relations. I'm Alec Hogg from biznews.com.